Fuck you! Australia! Germany! Africa!
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, the end of the end of the week at the middle of the month of March. It's 3/17/17. That is, it is the 17th day of March, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that, of course, is where you go and you click on chat room if you'd like to become part of the madcap real-time multimedia zany, wacky extravaganza that is the chat room on any given night when the program is live between the hours of 6 and 9 p.m. Eastern ta-da, Daylight Time. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and if you wander over right now, folks are wandering in even as we speak, and you'll be met by Anatole and Jules and V.T. Blom and moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who enjoying a lovely... lovely Northern California day has folded space to become man cave. This is a listener-supported broadcast, and thanks for all the support that we do, in fact, get. Thank you very much. Ah, 75 degrees in Northern California today, according to Sparky Man Cave. 48 in the studio right now. Gerald, nowhere in sight, so that leaves me to shut it, Sparky. I'm just do it, Gerald. I'll send a bill. Well, maybe he'll give me the Hitler pool winnings. I don't know. Sounds nicer there than it is here. Someday, we may have warm weather again. Apparently, we got our full complement of it with those 80-degree days in February, but of course, there's no such thing as climate change, and Jim Inhofe recently said teaching children about climate change constitutes child abuse. Yeah, I just took a little two count there to let that settle in. What a guy. Yeah. Uh-huh. Outside it's 36, here inside the studio, 48. I've got a bottle. Agnes started a bottle of propane for me. It is on high. Who knows? By program's end, we may have it all the way up to 55 degrees in here. Let's see. Tomorrow, rain, 51. Sunday, snow, 43. Oh, mercy sakes. Come Monday, we might get all the way up to 58 degrees and rain. There's really nothing spring-like coming anytime soon, including the first day of spring. Oh, well, Appalachia, what do you want? I mean, hey, we get four seasons here. Three of them in February alone. Mm-hmm. This is a listener-supported broadcast. It is a listener-supported broadcast effort, a listener-supported conversation. And we try to raise, and we've been struggling pretty much all week. Middle of the month is often like that. But we've been struggling all week long and trying to keep up. And we reach this Friday on the front porch, because that's what this is, Friday on the front porch. Here in about 55 minutes or so, Sparky will light up the Bob signal and lay out the breadcrumb trail. And we will have... we'll have our Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable Conversation. And you're welcome to participate. If you want to and you never have, you need to send a contact request on Skype, not to me, Bob Kincaid Horn, which is you need to send me a contact request if you want to do phone calls during the rest of the week. But for Friday on the Front Porch, you send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, Sparky Dunk, and he will show you the said Bob signal and point out the breadcrumb trail to you. And you will be engaged in something that is rather, it's unique in terms of progressive broadcasting. I don't know if they do it over on the right wing. I frankly don't expect them to do anything on the right wing except pick their teeth with their own toenail clippings. But, yeah, right. But he'll get you into the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable conversation. But as I said, this is a listener-supported broadcast operation. We would have had a lot more, more money to raise this evening, but for our merry little band of less than 100 subscribers. Gosh, it'd be nice to get up over 100. Gosh, it would be nice to reach 400 at 10 bucks a month, but I guess not anytime soon. Still, if you'd like to be a subscriber, when you go to headonradionetwork.com and you click on the Contribute tab, there's a little wee box there. See, you get on St. Patty's Day, Happy St. Patrick's Day, Erin Gabra, and all of that, you know. You get to say words like wee on St. Patty's Day. There's a wee little box there, and it says, make this a recurring monthly donation. And you click that little box. Are we sick of my crummy Irish accent yet? Yes, probably. But if you click the wee little box that says, make this a recurring monthly donation, well, by golly, they'll take it out the same day every month. And you don't even have to think about it. And if you put $10 in the box, then a leprechaun, no, there will be no leprechauns. Now, quit that. They'll just take it out every month, and you'll wind up paying, not even paying, because you can have it for free as long as we can keep this all up on the air. You'll be chipping in something on the order of, 15, 16 cents a night to keep this entire thing rolling and trundling along, and the wheels keep the wheels attached to the axles and the spokes attached to the wheels and keep the lot of it all out of the wagon route and out of the ditch. That's how it works. So that's about subscribing. And you know, we would have had last night. I knocked off early with $175 to go in fundraising. Because we try to raise $200 every night. And shortly thereafter, thank you very kindly, Jennifer. I think we're about to have a sorority of Jennifers. Not Jen in Australia, is what I mean. I don't think. But Jennifer kicked in $25, took us down to $150. And then shortly thereafter, in the wee morning hours of St. Patrick's Day, the very beginning of it, our subscribers kicked in and took us down to $130 to go. So thank you, one and all. That means this evening the fundraising goal is around $330. Have I got that right? Ciphering problem. So that works out to one at 330 or, oh, hell, two at 165, four at 8750. The head begins to spin. The eyeballs roll back in the head. 10 at 33, 33 at 10. Anyway, we got $330 to raise this evening. And I hope we do. Because there are bills to pay. Many of them. Many, many indeed. A little program note, program reminder. I have a surgical consult. Does anybody ever say, I have a surgical consult and sound real happy about it? I have a surgical consult on Monday at 12:30. I sincerely hope to be home in time to be on the air for More and Monday. But if I'm not, you know that things ran late and we had a hard, and we were late getting back up the mountain. Hopefully there won't be a blizzard on Monday. So 18, 19, 20. That would be the, yeah, that would be the 20th. 20th of March, which also will be the first day of spring. Okie dokie. The first day of spring, Monday, March 20th, and I'm not going to take the first day of spring off if I can possibly avoid it. Oh, okay. I'm not quite sure how to take this, but Scott and Punky O'Cockatiel letting me know that, I thought they were. Oh, wrong. Okay. There's the problem. Yeah, Scott and Punky O'Cockatiel says, "You sound just like my first grade teacher, a Holy Cross nun named Sister Claris. She was a little roly-poly woman with just the right voice and temperament to deal with a room full of six-year-olds." Yeah, they save the good nuns for first grade. You have to grow up a little bit, and then you find out what's really going on. Oh, and speaking of nuns, just because we're kind of working through some odds and ends here, I found a new series that Agnes and I are going to begin to watch over on Netflix. Neither of us speak a lick of Spanish. Thank God for subtitles. But it's called Juana Inés. And it is a fictionalized televersion of the life of Juana Inés de Santa Cruz. She was a largely autodidact philosopher of 17th century colonial Mexico, and it looks to have real potential. So I'm looking forward to Agnes and I, you know, doing the Mike and Carol Brady thing and watching it at the end of the evening. That's usually how we do our watching. And then somewhere along the way, we both fall asleep and don't know how the program ended. But that's what we, yeah. So, if you want to check it out on Netflix, you can tell me what you think. I'm a sucker for historical drama. You'd think that would be a problem, because if it's stuff that I actually know the history of, I get all pissed off when they play fast and loose with it. But, I just am. So, let's see. We've taken care of all the fundraising stuff. I mean, the fundraising isn't taken care of, but I mentioned it. And thank you very kindly to Larry for jumping in early and getting us started. Thank you, Larry. Thank you very kindly indeed. So Randy in PA has a question regarding the medical business I've been talking about. How is a spleen gastro? Well, it isn't. But you see, because the spleen and the pancreas lay one up against the other, sometimes the awful things that happen, bad things that happen to the pancreas, translate over to the spleen. That's the way it's been explained to me. So that's, it's a proximity thing, I guess. I've done some research. I found out something. People with pancreatic problems have much higher rates of medical success when they go to large hospitals that treat more than 118 cases per year. I also did some research and found out that the number one pancreas clinic, or number one pancreas treating hospital, I guess, is the fine folks in Rochester, Minnesota at the Mayo Clinic, followed by a distant second in the Cleveland Clinic. Third is Johns Hopkins, and on from there. So I don't know. We're just going to have to see how it all plays out. But I don't feel real good about getting, you know. I'm going to go to the consult, okay? I mean, I'm doing good here. I mean, that's a big jump for me. It's particularly annoying being not feeling good in the innards on St. Patty's Day. Now, I admit there's a problem. I know a whole bunch about my extended family tree. There are some blank spots. And you'll just have to hold this against me. You would suspect that I'd have some Irish in me. But I can't find him or her. Oh, I got English all over the place. And a goodly handful of Scots. And the Germans I was talking about the other night. You know, the Anabaptists. I'm only an Anabaptist. I can't find... I can't find any Irish, so you'll have to forgive me. But nonetheless, it being St. Patrick's Day, I did take a moment today to remember, and I've mentioned them in the past on this program, the San Patricios, the St. Patrick's Brigade, who switched side in the illegal, unjust, unconstitutional, and unnecessary, that's how Abraham Lincoln described it when he was in the House of Representatives, war that James K. Polk launched against the nation of Mexico because he could. They were Irish immigrants. They were treated like crap when they came here because this country didn't much care for Irish people. And then, in short order, they joined the military, went down to the Mexican War, looked up and went, wow, this is really filthy. And so they abandoned the American cause, joined the Mexican cause, and 16 of them were hanged as traitors. Or perhaps deserters. But they are honored on this day in Mexico, and they deserve to be remembered more broadly in this country. And moreover, remember also the man who started that war, a nasty president by the name of James K. Polk of Tenistan, who has been described by some historians as as the most powerful president between Andrew Jackson and Abraham Lincoln, because he did what he said he was going to do, and an effective president as a result of that. I have problems with that metric, though, because that means if Donald J. Trump and his pet Republican Congress manage to take food out of the mouths of grannies and veterans and children, then that'll make him an effective president, too, because, well, he's doing what he said he'd do. But there's also a cautionary tale, perhaps, for Comrade Kumquat in the life of James K. Polk. James K. Polk's life after the presidency was shorter than any other. And I think to this day remains one of the youngest presidents to die. The other two young presidents to die being JFK and James Garfield, both of whom were assassinated. You can make a compelling argument that JFK was the luckier of the two because Garfield lingered for months and was tortured to death by quacks. Really. The gunshot, he might have survived the gunshot had he been competently treated even in that age. But instead, he got quacks. And one particular quack. Right. But those two died in office. Polk lasted 3 months after he left the presidency, having promised that he would run for only one term as president. And so he kept his promise, quit. And with no cause, no justification, no legal right, no constitutional authority, invaded Mexico, 3 months after he left office, died of what you and I might call Montezuma's revenge. James K. Polk shit himself to death 3 months after he left office, and far more people on this planet remember the San Patricios than remember James K. Goddamn Polk. So, you know, there was no help to the 16 at the end of the rope, but others went on to lead happy lives and be revered in Mexico on St. Patrick's Day. Worth noting, worth remembering. Oh, and I would. I'd crawl across ground glass for some corned beef and cabbage. Woof. Yeah. Oh, it's time for a news update. See, you get the reverb for those because it's important. Remember a couple of nights ago we were talking about... it's hard not to giggle. We were talking about good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Oklahoma legislator Ralph Shorty. Yeah, his nickname's Stubby. I mean, he's just got, oh, mercy sakes. I mean, he's got family values. Merciful goodness. He's got family values just all over the place. Mm-hmm. Well, turns out Ralph Shorty, you may recall, was the subject of an investigation out in Oklahoma. Because a teenage boy's girlfriend called the teenage boy's daddy who then called law enforcement at which point in time law enforcement did what they call a welfare check. No, conservatives, don't worry, there was no money involved. It's not like anybody got a welfare check. They were just going to see if the teenage boy was okay. And in order to find out if, in fact, the teenage boy was okay, they had to go to the Super 8 Motel in, if I recall correctly, Moore, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Where they found good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Ralph Shorty in the presence of the said teenage boy, who then gave a statement. Well, the investigation is now largely complete. And good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Christian, Christ Jesus, Ralph Shorty, is facing 3 felony counts. He's charged in engaging in child prostitution, transporting a minor for prostitution, and engaging in prostitution within 1,000 feet of a church, which I find rather a contradiction in terms, but we'll leave that one go for a bit. And, of course, again, not to harp on anything, but the prostitution he was engaging in, this fine family values Republican Christian, was with a boy. But he's going to brazen it out, apparently. He still hasn't resigned from the Oklahoma State Senate. Nope. I'm sure he was just witnessing to the young man. Yes. Although Cleveland County, Oklahoma, First Assistant District Attorney Susan Caswell said he offered him money for sexual contact, then he picked up that minor and took him to a hotel for that purpose. Mm-hmm. The boy, the young man, the teenager, had messaged Ralph Shorty recently saying that he was needing some money for spring break. Ralph Shorty then replied, "Well, I ain't really got no chores to do. Would you be interested in any sexual stuff?" And the teenage boy said, "Yes." And in the message, just get a quick bite of the hockey puck, would you? Just trust me on this one. Through the body of the message, Shorty refers to the teenager as baby boy. Mm-hmm. And the cops got all this off of the young man's Kindle Fire. The teenage boy wrote back, "Hey, keep updated, because I want you bad, Daddy." Oh. So, apparently, when the police arrived, they said that room 120 reeked of what they called raw marijuana. I don't know. Is that to say it smelled like somebody had been butchering skunks in there? Must have had some good shit. And the cops found a bottle of lotion and a box of condoms in a backpack. Meanwhile, Ralph Shorty, follower of Christ, had apparently sent a message to the boy earlier saying, "Hey, you want to smoke up?" And when the boy said, "Yeah, Daddy," he said, well, you need to bring a pipe and a lighter. I guess because Ralph Shorty is a fiscal conservative. Mm-hmm. It just gets more lurid. It turns out that Ralph Shorty Evangelical had been messaging the boy for over a year, So we don't know how many times Ralph and Baby Boy got together. Ralph Shawty, by the way, is 35 years old. And at 35, he has been... Oh, by the way, he's out on bail. Not to worry, because... It's not like Ralph Shawty would go and find somebody else to be having sex with instead of his one-man, one-woman married wife. Because he believes strongly in Christian marriage. And the sacred, ordained by God union of one man and one woman and one 16-year-old boy that'll call you daddy. Butter. But Ralph Shorty's out on bail. He made bail. Because apparently the court system there in Oklahoma isn't too all-fired worried about him going out and finding another baby boy. Or inviting one to his... Maybe he's out on bail on home confinement. Got him an ankle bracelet. And can't have no baby boys coming to his house. Because maybe Mrs. Shorty is there. We don't know. But he has not resigned, as noted, from the Oklahoma State Senate. And here's the best part. Out in Oklahoma, Stan, he's vested for his state retirement. And because of the way the laws of Oklahoma stand are written, he's going to get to keep it. Now, he has been suspended, and his name's been taken off of his door. And House Minority Leader Scott Inman of Oklahoma said, we need to get this behind us. Hint to Democrat House Minority Leader Scott Inman. Don't use behind. The Senate needs to go ahead and expel Senator Shorty if he doesn't resign before then. There's a lot of big issues before the state of Oklahoma, and the last thing we need is the distraction of this particular case getting in the way of doing the people's business. Now, if Senator Shorty was to be convicted of, say, bribery or corruption or perjury, he would lose his retirement. But guess what? Guess what? If he has sex with a child and gets convicted of it, he gets to keep that pension. And as it stands, his pension will constitute, right now, at something around $9,000 a year. Over the course of, say, a 25-year retirement, well, the people of the state of Oklahoma would be paying the child prostitute aficionado something on the order of $230,000. And by the way, as of right now, he's still able to vote on the Senate floor, you know, for whatever bills that might come up in the Oklahoma Senate, calling for good, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical family values Republicans to stand up for family values and the oil interests and the gas interests and the NRA and freedom and liberty, sit. And yeah, he can still vote on them bills. And, bonus, he still gets a paycheck. Yes. So there it was. The Super 8 Motel. Ralph Shorty. A teenage boy who said he needed money for spring break. But wanted to smoke a little weed. But Ralph was too short to buy any... To buy a lighter or a pipe or some papers. I guess the weed was on the teenager. Whew! Man! And see, remember, just remember, Ralph Shorty, as I'm sure they will tell you down to whatever Baptist church he goes to, Ralph Shorty is not perfect. Just forgiven. Mm-hmm. Not perfect, just forgiven. And that's important because that means all he's got to do is he's got to ask his best friend Jeebus. Jeebus, I'm sorry about all that sex I had with that teenage boy and the smoking of the dope and everything. Can you ever forgive me, Jeebus? And Jeebus will say, "Well, sure. We all screw up now and then. You betcha. Come on." So I figured we would do well to make sure and catch up with that news update because you wouldn't want to miss something like that. Oh, and by the way, it being St. Patrick's Day, another thing I can't do besides the corned beef and cabbage. I can't be having a pint of the black stuff. You know, Guinness. But Paul Ryan got a pint. And it was downright embarrassing. He was at the Friends of Ireland luncheon yesterday. And apparently he left, he yacked his way or blabbed his way along until his pathetic pint of Guinness had gone all flatty-looking, and he held it up like he was holding a mouse by the tail. You know, coming from... I can't figure. A guy comes from Wisconsin, and he doesn't have an appreciation of beer? Sorry. But he offered up, oh, by the way, at the same luncheon, Mike Pence said, "Top of the morning." Really? No. Yeah, I know. What? Mm-hmm. He held up that pint of alleged Guinness like he was holding up a dead mouse by the tail. And somebody tweeted it. And Naomi O'Leary said, "First Mike Pence says top of the morning, then Paul Ryan holds up this appalling pint. Grave missteps by the United States." Others pointing out that just like the federal government, his pint of Guinness lacked a proper head. Well played. Somebody else on Twitter hollered, "Fake bruise!" And that right there. I don't think we've ever given a cowbell for somebody else's tweet, but that's worth it. But it's indicative of the fact that all of these right wingers are to one degree or another fakes. They pretend to care about, well, barely pretend to care about poor folks, and then they cut out Meals on Wheels. They really, really pretend to care about our wounded warriors, and then they knock out Meals on Wheels that feeds 500,000 veterans every year. Yeah. Fakes. Somebody said $5 says he's trying to pass off Diet Coke as Guinness. It's a leprechaun, C-O-N. Ah, see? Yeah. Clever. And you could tell that some real live Irish people were getting into the conversation because they used words that Americans don't use, like ghastly. As in, that's a ghastly pint. What else? Oh, my personal favorite. Somebody tweeted, I've produced better pints of Guinness after I've drunk them. Hear, hear. Aaron Gibraltar. Everybody was getting in on the act, though. It was amazing. The Prime Minister of Ireland's Parliament showed up yesterday. And I was really grateful for the pronouncer. Because Gaelic names bear no relationship to the actual... Gaelic words bear no relationship to the actual letters in the words. The Prime Minister of Ireland, for instance, is called the T-A-O-S-E-A-C-H. And you look at that and you go, what am I supposed to do with that? And me, a knower of words. Well, it turns out we got a pronouncer, and that is pronounced Taoiseach. And so he showed up, and his name is Enda Kenny, and he is the Taoiseach, the Prime Minister of Ireland. And lo and behold, Enda Kenny took what is usually a jovial occasion and proceeded to lecture Comrade Kumquat about immigration. There are millions out there who want to play their part for America, if you like, who want to make America great. You heard that before? We would like this to be sorted. You're talking about 50,000 undocumented Irish immigrants. And don't worry, the ICE are not rounding them up. But still, somebody could turn on them. You know, Trump can turn on people on a dime or over a dime. Taoiseach Enda Kenny said, we would like this to be sorted. It would remove a burden of so many that they could now stand in the light and say, now I am free to contribute to America as I know I can. That's what people want. All they want is the opportunity to be free. And even choked up a little bit. Because, see, there are a whole lot of Irish Americans here who just, well, I mean, they voted. They voted for the Tangerine Tiberius. But back home on the Emerald Isle, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini is recognized for what he is, a nasty-ass fascist, and is roundly and soundly despised. And so there was no way that Enda Kenny could just stand up there and say, ha, 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 oh, begorra, and let it go at that. Of course not. Other news today? There was a release of information that Rexxon Tillerson, ostensibly our Secretary of State, Exxon's ambassador without portfolio to the State Department and to the world, he went to Asia and declared that it was the opinion of the Trump regime. See, Gene, I said regime. It's the opinion of the Trump regime that sanctions may not be enough for North Korea. This is the war of words. One, the Korean conflict never ended. There was never a peace treaty, merely a truce. It remains a hot war in a truce status. So shit can get real, real quick. And so Rexxon Tillerson went over. And I guess nobody ever, even though he's a native Texan, nobody ever explained to Rexxon Tillerson what happens when you stir shit. The more you stir, the more it stinks. And so he went over to Asia just to stir things up a mite. See if maybe he could get North Korea to fire the first shot. Because his statement opened up the possibility of possibly, well, okay, I said of unilateral preemptive action. You know, remember the Bush doctrine? Oh, but you know, the real danger would be if we had Hillary Clinton as president, because, you know, she's such a warmonger. Meanwhile, we're sending another 1,000 troops and no real understanding of why, maybe to be bombing targets for Big Bad Vladdy Daddy. We're sending another 1,000 troops into Syria. Yeah, I read that news story the other day and once again remembered how the precious little sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade told us that Hillary Clinton, the devil, wants to get us into a war with Russia. Ooh, Bruga Bruga. Ooh, Goldman Sachs, goddamn. Ooh, email servers. Aye. Fucking dumbasses. Somebody had to say it. Well, now it appears that it's Donald J. Trump who's ramping up action in the Middle East and trying to start World War III with a nuclear power in the form of North Korea.
We're going to love that. Yeah.
Because, see, North Korea may not have shit for intercontinental ballistic missiles, but I'm pretty sure they could park one on downtown Seoul. Aren't you? And then, well, I mean, as the saying goes, there goes the neighborhood. And so we launch one at Pyongyang, and the fallout zone is kind of close to the Chinese frontier, and well, maybe they decide to lob one at us. And suddenly we're back in that essay we talked about some several months ago, written even more months before that, where the guy in The Guardian said, you know, it's just little stupid things that wind up creating great big bloodbath-sized global nightmares. Yeah, I was reminded of that because in addition to finding that Netflix series, Juana Inez, watched a German film last night. I don't know when it was, maybe 2013 something. For American or English-speaking audiences, it was titled Sarajevo. And it was the story of an investigative magistrate lawyer who, I got to admit, I think it would have been, it might have had greater success in the U.S. had his name not been Dr. Pepper. Oh, really, Herr Dr. Pfeffer. But he was tasked with trying to determine exactly what happened leading up to the assassination attempt in Sarajevo that got the First World War off and running. And it was a nice break from my America-centrism, because I realized that even to this day, there are unanswered questions. I mean, anybody who's been to college maybe and had a world history class knows that the fatal shots in Sarajevo in 1914 were fired by a guy named Gavrilo Princips, a Serb, a Bosnian Serb. But there were other conspirators along the way. But the plot of the film, and I thought it well done. It's a little tough when you have to read a movie instead of, you know, hear. I mean, you know what I mean, subtitles. Because it was a German language film. It turned out that things were not quite as they seemed. And lo and behold, there were echoes in it that had me sitting there going, son of a bitch, Dealey Plaza. Because the question was, why did the Archduke's car slow to a crawl to turn a corner, and why was the route publicized all over the place in advance of the visit? No spoilers here. You might enjoy the film. I suspect you would. But that's a question that's been resonating, apparently, for 100 years. Just as some people wonder why the route in November 1963 was designed to slow the Kennedy motorcade to a near crawl as they turned into what would become the field of fire. The target zone. Again, I think it was on Netflix. Pretty sure. And it's called Sarajevo. A nice little love story wrapped up in it. Nice mystery. And, I learned stuff I didn't know. And then I went and looked around on the interweb tubes and sort of learned the difference between history and, or found the differences between history and artistic license and things like that. It was certainly worth the effort. On one more thing before we go to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and Sparky lights up the Bob signal and throws out the breadcrumbs. Beauty and the Beast. Now, by now, you know that Disney redid Beauty and the Beast as a live-action film. And you've probably heard the story about how a drive-in movie theater in northeast Alabama has said that it will not show the film because there is a sodomite depicted in it. It's Alabama, y'all. There's a reason we call it that. Well, you may or may not know that I think it was Indonesia asked Disney to cut out all the scenes with the gay person, and Disney said, no thanks, we're not going to do that. We'll just do without the Indonesian market. Freaking homophobes. But you may not know that our dear, dear, abiding, snuggly, cuddly friends, the Russians, are doing the same. Oh, I know. Vladimir Putin's just all snuggly and cuddly, and he runs around with his shirt off, and he wears groovy disco chains around his neck and shit, and he's just, he's as fine as frog's hair. Right? I mean, he wouldn't do nothing to nobody unless he was having some journalists or dissidents or political opponents murdered. I mean, he does do that. No, he don't. That's just anti-Russian propaganda. God damn it. There goes Bob getting all polarized again. Except for Vladimir Putin is a bloodthirsty, tyrannical autocrat. And you may recall that back in 2013, because he's a bloodthirsty, autocratic, tyrannical asshole, that he signed off on a law that was passed by the Russian parliament. They passed a nationwide "Don't Say Gay" bill. Absolutely. It is forbidden in Mother Russia to spread gay propaganda among minors. And so, Culture Minister Vladimir Medinsky has said, we will be taking appropriate action against this film because of shameless propaganda of sin. Really? There's nothing, I mean, there's not that, really? Beauty and the Beast is political? No, Beauty and the Beast has a gay character now. And this is intolerable in Mother Russia because there are no homosexuals in Mother Russia. Everyone is happy, happy heterosexual couple. No one engages in the gay. Yeah. And of course, sweet, snuggly, cuddly Vlad has implicitly sanctioned waves of homophobic attacks on gay people, trans people, those would be transphobic attacks, because he's snuggly, cuddly tyrant. Hey, well, you know, at least he's not putting polonium in your fucking tea. Right?
Because he's snuggly and cuddly. And only wants best for what is... Wants best for Mother Russia. And occasionally bank account of Vladimir Putin. Huh?
Yeah.
Alexander Shokhov has also said, if scenes violate the law, film should be banned from cinemas. As soon as we get a copy of film with relevant paperwork for distribution, we will consider it according to the law.
And hoping to stay on the good side of Big Bad Vladdy Daddy, Russian actor Pavel Derevyanko said in an interview with Russia 24,
I will not take my kid to this movie. No.
Brother Deacon Asa points out, no homosexual in Mother Russia, save for the Russian chief homo who occupies the Kremlin. It will. And before I go to the break, a question. And this is for everybody, not just any particular segment. I go back to Oklahoma State Senator, upstanding Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, family values Republican, Ralph Shorty. And I ask the following question. Perhaps we can bounce it around a little bit during the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Why do you suppose good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, family values Republican, Oklahoma State Senator Ralph Shorty felt the need to have sex with a teenage boy in exchange for money and a little bit of dope smoking? I mean, I'm pretty sure that there are adult male gay people in Oklahoma. Why, I'll bet there might even be a gay bar or three in places like Tulsa and Oklahoma City, if not Muskogee. Don't you figure? I mean, there are layers to this thing, and they deserve a little bit of serious analysis. Okay, let's not say analysis. Consideration. If you look up Ralph Shorty, you will find photographs of Ralph Shorty, 35 years old. I'm thinking he'd be real big in the bear community. He's all fuzzy and stuff. And I'm not being a smartass about that. Could it be that he had to sneak around? Well, there we go. Thank you. Thank you. Stockton Larry in the chat room. Bob, quit telling Shorty who to have sex with. Well, I think we've got a vested societal interest in telling him not to have sex with underage boys. I mean, there seem to be statutes on and, you know, soliciting within 1,000 feet of a church, even. I guess if you're trying to have sex with a little boy and you're within 1,000 feet of a church, you're supposed to just take him to church instead, so the priest can do that. But really, why do you suppose that is? I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask maybe a silly question. Is Ralph Shorty closeted gay? Is he just not getting what he needs at home with his good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, family values, Republican wife? Is it a dynamic conflict of self versus societal expectations, or is it something simpler? That he knows that no matter how fine a legislator he is, he could never get elected in Oklahoma as a gay Republican. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, Mr. Shorty goes long. He puts the lotion on his skin. Bob, may I say how much I really hate these sons of bitches? A lot. And Clarence points out, and I kind of wondered from the photograph I saw. Yes, Ralph Shorty is, in fact, an indigenous person. He's Native American. His Oklahoma State Senate bio says he's a member of the Rosebud Sioux Indian Tribe. Part of his childhood spent on the Rosebud Sioux Indian Reservation in Grass Mountain, South Dakota, before moving to Oklahoma City, where he attended more public schools. Went to Heartland Baptist Bible College in Oklahoma City in preparation for mission work in Uganda. We talked about that. What's one of those things that the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered evangelicals get to do when they go doing missionary work in a place like Uganda? That's right, they fuck the young'uns. He and his high school sweetheart, Jennifer, continue to make their home in South Oklahoma City with their two children, Caitlin and Elena. And that's why, instead of going and doing missionary work, he decided to go into the oil and gas industry. Either way, there's some drilling involved. The question remains, why? Thank you, Clarence. Thank you for pointing that out. And I don't necessarily know that I've got the answer. Maybe we can sort through it as we engage in the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable. Is it the forbidden aspect? Because again, even in Oklahoma, you can just be gay now. You can even get all gay married. I mean, if he just had a philandering urge, he could have, and he was heterosexual, he could have just gone philandering with some other woman, not his wife, and it just would have been adultery, and not the, not the mortal sin of sodomy, and hopefully wouldn't have involved a kid. Luda, who is himself, as you may recall, an indigenous person, said in regard to Ralph Shorty, you guys can have him. We'll pass on him. We shun chomos. I think I know what chomo means, but you may have to clear that up for me, Luda. But it is, as the line from The King and I goes, a puzzlement. Thank you very kindly to Alma. Thank you very much indeed for jumping in on fundraising this evening. Thank you so very much. And thank you to Laura. So that means we are down to $310 to go in fundraising for the evening. It's a big help. We keep moving, just move it down a notch, move it down a notch, move it down a notch. And I had a note from Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve, this one being Steve in New York, who said, as you know, I'm generally a believing Catholic Christian in complete contrast to the right-wing Jebus Lazarus haters of the Paul Ryan ilk. In my little bit of defiance of these Beatitude haters, I'd like to offer a $15 challenge. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very kindly. That means that Steve will double the next $15 that comes in, which will take us down to $280 to go in fundraising as quickly as that happens. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Luda. Chomos, child molesters. We shun child molesters, says Luda, in regard to the attitude taken by his people toward people who, you know, fuck kids. Like good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Ralph Shorty. All right, then. $15 challenge on the table, $310 in fundraising to go, and we'll take a little break at 12 minutes past the hour. Again, the send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc on Skype if you'd like to engage in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Sparky Dunk. And for those of you who absolutely cannot negotiate Skype, we have the stress line for you. 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. So, little break, and a long-distance dedication going out to Senator Ralph Shorty on bond in Oklahoma. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sex and drugs and rock and roll. Is all my brain and body need. Sex and drugs and rock and roll. It's very good indeed. Keep your silly ways or throw them out the window. The wisdom of your ways, I've been there and I know. Lots of other ways. What a jolly bad show. If all you ever do is business you don't like. Sex and drugs and rock and roll. Sex and drugs and rock and roll. Sex and drugs and rock and roll is very good indeed. Every bit of clothing ought to make you pretty. You can cut the clothing. Grey is such a pity. I should wear the clothing of Mr. Walter Mitty. See my tailor, he's called Simon. I know it's going to fit. Here's a little bit of advice, you're quite welcome, it is free. Don't do nothing that is cut price, you know what they'll make you be. They will try their tricky device, trap you with the ordinary. Get your teeth into a small slice, the cake of liberty.
and drugs and rock and roll. Sex 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 and drugs and rock and roll.
Sixteen minutes past the hour on the 17th day of March, 2017. This is The Horn, Friday on the front porch, and we will not shilly-shally about at all. Instead, we will go over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and check in with longtime, indefatigable, inveterate, veteran Skype, Horn Malloy Skype chat group moderator, Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
So you want me to stay quiet about the weather, right?
Oh, no. No, I want you to talk about the weather, so I again get to say shut it, Sparky, for Gerald. See, that's how that works.
It was a beautiful day here until I was trying to mow the North 40 and the lawnmower self-drive quit. So that was...
Walk behind?
Yeah, but it's a snapper self-propelled.
Yeah.
See, with all this rain we've had, I've had to mow it. All this weedage grows up on the back lot out here, and I got to kind of get it mowed down. And if I get a warm day, I'll spray it with weed killer, so I don't have to deal with it.
Because otherwise, jungle.
Yeah. It'll raise up almost as tall as the pasture is starting to get now.
What you need, Sparky, it's time to get all sustainable and renewable. You need a goat.
No, I don't need a goat. The
you thought about it for a second.
No, well, I know. My lesbian neighbors have two goats. And they like to screw around with in between them and the goats are two dogs that love to go over there and bark at the goats. And the goats love to run up to the cyclone fence and just fuck with the dogs. So if I had a goats over here, those dogs would be going back and forth.
Because the dogs aren't kept on their own property, of course.
Well, it's a fenced in lot just like mine, but they have the run of it. She has her chicken coop out back there, and the goat pens are on the other side of the chicken coop. But then they go out there and they let the goats out to eat the grass.
Right. I mean,
so they have to go over to the fence and they're just like fuck with the dogs. They just have to go over there and do it. They go right up to the fence, and the dogs are coming up there, rah, 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 and they just stand there.
Straight out of a Warner Brothers cartoon with Foghorn Leghorn and the dog and everything, except the part where he beats the dog's ass with a 2x4.
Well, I could help him with the 2x4s. I got a whole bunch of them from my neighbor's remodel. Hey, you want to play What's That Sound?
Yeah, okay.
Did you hear that?
I did hear that.
That's my table saw.
You didn't give me a chance. I was gonna bet barber clippers. Or maybe goat trimmers.
It's my dad's old Rockwell Delta table saw that hasn't been used in years.
Still turns on. Sounds like it runs like a top.
Well, I had to put a new belt on it and do some fine-tuning on it. But I got it working again. And I've been ripping some 2x4s for a project.
Ooh, what kind of project?
Oh, it's a thing me and my stepson are doing. I don't have to go into detail, do I?
No, I guess not. No, 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 don't. Don't. No details.
How about a Donnie the Rat update?
Well, I was going to ask you about Donnie the Rat. Did he go away, or is he hanging around?
No, he was out here messing around last night. I come to find out this when I came out here today. I have these two swivel high bar stools that I got at the workbench here. And then I got underneath the workbench, there's a shelf where I've got one section just got hammers in it. And I got a collection of hammers, all kinds of hammers. And then I got another place that's got a bunch of my dad's old welding gloves and stuff. And I keep a BB gun underneath there on the shelf. Well, he was underneath in that shelf last night and knocked out. I had a long green plastic shoehorn I use when I change shoes out here for when it's muddy or something. And he knocked the shoehorn out. It was on the floor, and I looked up, and here's all these rat prints all over one of my high back, well, it's not high back, it's low back cushion bar stools. Just little mouse tracks all over the place. So he came out and did a jig last night or something on my bar stool.
Hey, okay, so he's taunting you now. I mean, you had me worried when he was down there with the BB gun. I was afraid he was contemplating suicide.
No, it's a Daisy pump.
I mean, when even the rats are killing themselves, you know that the Trump administration has gone too far.
No, you'd have to put a BB in the chamber and then pump it up first, you know.
Hey, Sparky.
So maybe you want to leave it loaded for him?
No, it doesn't hold the air.
He's not that big a rat, is he? I mean, it's not like he can wrap. It's not like he can wrap his tail around the trigger and put his mouth all over the muzzle. No.
No, no. But good news, my stepson's bringing down a live trap when he comes, and he's got a couple other traps because he lives up in critter country, and he's used that live trap to catch some critters before.
So what, you're going to humane trap the rat?
Yeah, that seems like the only way to catch him, because you won't see him otherwise.
I guess I'm just
my wife thinks he was in the laundry room the other night. How he got in there, I don't know.
Hey, rats can get around, but I mean...
There was a little dropping on the floor that looked like a rat turd. Anyway, it was just one of them. I cleaned it up.
Maybe it's Slim Pickens out there in the man cave.
Well, there's peanut shells and stuff out here he munches on.
Yeah, but those things will bind you up for a month of Sundays, believe me.
Now, I caught a mouse once getting in my garbage can where the peanut shells are, and he couldn't get out. So I dealt with the mouse. But Donnie, he can go anywhere in this shop, man. He can scurry. I mean, he's got aerial freeway up in the rafters.
Yeah, I just don't want him to become a man cave mascot.
No, we'll get rid of him.
He'll chew some wires if you're not careful there, Sparky.
Will be kind of hard since everything's in MC cable.
Okay. I was actually going to ask you if since you hadn't seen Donnie for a while, if you'd maybe gone to the country club for the weekend, you know?
No, he was here last night. That's all I know.
Like Miralago Mussolini is doing every weekend, it seems like, you know?
Oh, is he back to Florida this weekend?
Yep, going back.
And you know the times that he's been to the number of times he's been down to that dump we could probably pay for Meals on Wheels. Not saying, just saying.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. Absolutely.
Just we're spending to keep his wife in New York.
Yeah, well, she's finally free of him in New York.
Yeah, but then when they go to Mar-a-Lago, you know what happens? She flies in a little Air Force executive jet that they have in the United States of America fleet.
Right.
From New York to Andrews. Goes up to New York, picks her up, flies her to Andrews, and then she gets on Air Force One, flies down to Florida with him.
Also, oh, I see. Okay, she meets up with him, and then they go together to.
So yeah, who buys the jet fuel for leg one of that trip?
I don't know.
You know, the part where she flies from New York to Andrews?
That's called commuting, Bob.
What's it cost? About $10,000 an hour to run one of them little executive jets?
Hey, every bit of it, I imagine.
Well, probably the U.S. taxpayers, my guess, you know.
Right. But the thing is, the new metric, as explained by that immigration mistake of generations past, Mick Mulvaney, is there have to be demonstrable results. Okay? Where are the demonstrable results in flying melania, from New York to D.C. to Florida every weekend?
Because
the only demonstrable results that we have are that as soon as Jared and Ivanka go off to celebrate Shabbos, he goes nuts on fucking Twitter.
Hmm.
Oh, and by the way, while we're talking, because we just briefly did, about demonstrable results. And you know how we have to zero out feeding kids at school and feeding veterans and Meals on Wheels for grannies and things like that because Mick Mulvaney says there aren't any demonstrable results. I got a little something. 8 studies met the inclusion criteria, including 2 randomized controlled trial studies from the same intervention, 1 cohort study, 2 pre-post studies, and 3 cross-sectional studies. All but 2 studies found home-delivered meal programs to significantly improve diet quality, increase nutrient intakes, and reduce food insecurity and nutritional risk among participants. Other beneficial outcomes include increased socialization and opportunities, improvement in dietary adherence, and higher quality of life. Conclusions. Home-delivered meal programs improve diet quality and increase nutrient intakes among participants, nursing homes to home and community-based services, by helping older adults maintain independence and remain in their homes and communities as their health and functioning decline.
Sounds pretty damn demonstrable to me.
It's exactly what I was about to say. It sounds pretty damn demonstrable in my book. And by the way, did you catch the clip of who was it? Was it Mulvaney talking about how we can no longer ask coal miners in Appalachia to blah, 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 or a single mother with 2 kids in Detroit to pay for blah, blah, blah. Did you catch that?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was particularly obnoxious.
Mm.
And I got...
Mother in Detroit probably doesn't even pay any taxes.
Well, there's that, earned income tax credit and that kind of thing. But what it boils down to is... It has nothing to do. No, translated from the original weasel speak is, we can no longer ask coal company executives, oil company executives, hedge fund managers to foot any of the bill for feeding the American people who no longer have the ability to do so themselves. They just need to die. I mean, God damn, this is eugenics, okay? This really is eugenics. And, I'm sick and everything. Sick's probably not the right word.
Yeah, you're sick, Kincaid.
But the for my generation, you know, the ones that already got screwed by Tip and Ronnie back in 86, and people younger, I know we're still of an earning age, and so we're still out there slogging away. But if you have a couple of minutes and you sit down and think about what the future looks like, it's kind of terrifying, isn't it?
It is. It is. I mean, our generation, I mean, we're going to get screwed.
We're going to get, we already have. Rick, we're going to get killed.
Yeah.
I mean, in many ways, just letting people starve, I mean, it takes a little longer, but it's actually more cost effective than actively killing them.
Well, yeah,
and that way there's never really expenses. A smoking gun. A bunch of Republicans can say, well, you know, we just couldn't afford it anymore, at the same time that they're, you know, funneling more money into the Pentagon budget.
Right. Right. No,
did you have
I
to
guess
see
this.
Did you have
it
to
is
see
a form of eugenics. Go ahead there, Sparky.
Did you happen to see the Van Jones video where he did a Meals on Wheels delivery to a shut-in woman?
Yeah, yeah, it was pretty moving.
She hadn't been out of the house in 7 years.
Yeah. Wow.
And then she says that she knows what it's like. People would eat cat food now. If she didn't get her Meals on Wheels. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think before Social Security, you know, what, 50% of retired people lived in poverty?
Yeah.
And people did eat cat food regularly, you know?
Well, and before Social Security, and it's the difference between rural and urban living, and there's absolutely no ethnic attachment to that in this case. And some of it carries over into urban settings, but you had, I can work from my own family history and not necessarily try to transpose it onto anybody else. The same topic is covered to a certain extent in Joe Bajant's Rainbow Pie. But you had multi-generational families, extended families. This is before the advent of the so-called nuclear family. And nuclear family doesn't mean a family during the nuclear age. It means a family that is reduced, a family that has been atomized, that is, you know, mom and pop, or mom and mom in modern parlance, mom and mom, or dad and dad, and, you know, kids being the electrons sort of spinning around the nucleus. Well, in previous generations, it was more like a molecule, where you had different elements joined together. So when people got too old to earn and too old to work, there was a familial social contract that said, well, you don't just throw them out into the cold. They cared for your young ass when you didn't do anything, and now it's your turn. And so a lot of folks got old, died at home, and the working adults took care of the young and the old, with the understanding that when they became the old, the working adults would take care of them and the young. Well, that's all gone now. That's why we have nursing homes.
Except in my case.
Well, and I was going to say, and in your case, Sparky, you and your lovely wife did your best to maintain that old model into the present day, because you took care of your mom and dad.
Yeah, but we made a promise to them 20 years before that, I think. Because my mom always worried about it.
I have a sneaking suspicion that there are a lot of people in my generation who, when they sit down and think about it, are, one, terrified, because anybody who's ever been in a nursing home probably is, even visiting. The idea of that being your end of days.
Oh, I've worked in nursing homes. They're horrible.
And there, and I would suspect there are more than a few in my generation who are saying, look, when I get to the point when it's like that, you know, I'll just take care of things myself. And, you know, maybe it would fit, because mine is, we got to remember that mine is the generation that has suddenly seen the fall off in life expectancy. So if we don't manage to shuffle off early, as a bunch of us are, then it's really not that much of a leap to think, well, kids are gone. Nobody's gonna take care of us. That, you know, that contract, that familial contract of a century ago and less, has been shattered. And if you look at something like the assault on Medicare and Medicaid, well, the reason nursing homes exist has a lot to do with Medicare and Medicaid, does it not?
It does, absolutely, Bob. There was a caller to Norm's show yesterday, I think, who said that he traced, he used to work at like a state mental hospital. They used to put all the, you know, older people who got Alzheimer's and dementia and so forth in, you know, state mental hospitals. And he said that, you know, there were no nursing homes in like the early 60s. And it was only after, you know, he worked there like in 64. And it was only after Medicare came about and Medicaid that nursing homes sprouted up as a place to take care of, you know, people who, you know, were, you know, let's say losing their faculties, declining in health, that kind of thing. So, yeah, you're right about that.
It's a terrifying proposition.
Yeah. Yeah. And my understanding because
we've moved to a model where essentially we are warehousing the non-productive.
Yeah.
And frankly, yeah. I think my forebears, for however hard they may have had it, had the better bargain. I just noticed that Steve from Georgia Stan has wandered in. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Bob. What's going on?
Sounds like you've had a whale of a day.
Oh, yeah. The fun never stops. It just never stops. And I've heard the discussion is nursing homes. You know, I'm up against that now. If it wasn't for veterans assistance, I wouldn't be able to keep mom in the assisted living center she's in now. And that with her Social Security, I'm still running short and having to come out of pocket every month. The costs are just staggering. And if you think, okay, well, I'm a young man, why shouldn't I get some long-term insurance so I don't wind up in some pee hole somewhere? Have you priced that out?
It's crazy.
It's ridiculous. I mean, nobody can afford it unless you're a millionaire.
And so, see, that's the thing. If you are, you know, you're not going off to some facility. You're going to stay right where you are and have somebody come in and take care of you. I mean, you've told me a little bit, and I presume your mom gets pretty decent care.
Yeah, which is a nice assisted living facility. It's like being at the Hilton. Hell, I wouldn't mind staying there. I mean, and I'm not just saying that to alleviate my own guilt either. I mean, it's true. I don't know if you've seen the assisted facilities, but some of them are really nice. She doesn't have to do a thing.
They're different from convalescent homes.
Yeah, they're different from state-run nursing homes. But, you know, if her dementia gets any worse and they can't handle her, then I don't have any, you know, my hands are tied.
Yeah, and you know, bye, Granny. And it's, look, I mean, it's hard for us, I think, to come to the sort of existential realization that we live in a cruel country.
And no other country treats their elderly folks this poorly that I'm aware of.
Yeah, well, depends on what you mean by other country.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was thinking compared to, like, Japan, you know, where they respect their older folks, and they do their best to make sure that they're taken care of. Well, a blue-collar worker, we don't have that luxury. We're just scraping by as it is. And then when the worm turns and you got to take care of mom and dad, it'll put a hurting on you, Bob.
Right. And see, all of this, Steve, turns back around to the reason, as stated in that little blurb that I read a couple of minutes ago, the reason you have things like Meals on Wheels.
Exactly.
The goal is to keep people in their homes, in their communities, for as long as possible, so that they can be comfortable. Because I don't want to make too many generalizations. I don't want to make general, but
it's okay.
I mean, I know from my own family's experience, that when you uproot Granny and take her somewhere else, that the shock of the change.
It's traumatic for everybody.
It sent my grandmother's brain on a trip it never came back from.
Right. Well, mom's already on that trip, so I don't know if that's an advantage or a disadvantage. But dementia is such a horrible disease, and you know it could happen to anybody. And it's depressing if you sit around and think about it.
Oh, Steve. I mean, when my grandmother Kincaid was on the way out, and by that I mean years, she lived to be 90. This Christian woman, and I don't mean that. I'm not making any mockery. Okay, I'm not having any. This is not.
Oh,
a joke.
I understand, man.
I mean, this is a Christian woman who never wore a pair of pants a day in her life, because she took so seriously the admonition in, I think, Deuteronomy, that a woman shall not put on the raiment of a man, nor a man the raiment of a woman. Okay? It was dresses and skirts all her life. This is the same woman who became convinced that the metric system would change the clock, who along the way had been probably responsible for educating more young minds on this side of the river than anybody before or since, and was she was brilliant, and in a different world might have been an entirely different who knows what she could have accomplished. But that's the story of Appalachia. As her mind went away in a little three-bedroom house in Alabama, she had her own room. She would lay in bed, and all night long, she would cry out, "Oh, Jesus, save me. Jesus, help me. Jesus, where are you?"
And tell me that doesn't rip your guts out. I mean, anybody with a soul.
Oh, it broke my mother's heart.
Of course.
And it was laden with grief to my father. And it got to where, and you know, this is just how the brain works. If she could find her shoes, she would. Now this is a woman who had both of her knees broken after being run over by a car back in her late 50s. And she was told she would never walk again. She walked. She gardened a half an acre of ground with a cane in one hand.
Wow.
and a hoe in the other.
Wow.
Tough woman. So if she could find her shoes, she could get her walker and head for the door. But she had those priorities still in her mind. So if she could not find her shoes, she would not go outside.
So you hit her shoes.
So it became a nightly exercise in hiding her shoes, which sounds, yeah. I mean, that sounds abusive. That sounds goddamn cruel. But it's not like hiding her. We left the, she had to have her walker so she could get, across the room to the potty chair.
I can relate. I can so relate. Mom was an independent woman. She was always used to having her own money. And now I got to give it to an administrator to divvy it out to her like a child. The whole thing is just.
I mean, I think back. There's an image in my mind. I was starting. Well, when she passed away, I was. I was in the middle of college. But I have this image when she still had her mind of her sitting at our kitchen table, and my mother would get up dutifully every day, and she had a cup of Sanka. It's what she liked. That she flavored with canned milk. Not half and half, not milk, nope, canned milk. Because canned milk was a miracle when she was coming up.
Oh yeah.
So she'd have a cup of Sanka flavored with canned milk, and my mother would warm her a jelly donut, and that was her morning. And then they would go to the living room, and they would sit, and she would crochet, and they would watch televangelists and talk about Jesus. But you know what? I far prefer that she had that.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah, apparently this speaks to some people. Alma said, thanks for helping me to figure out how to subscribe to your podcast. She says, I was a nursing center home administrator in Moore, Oklahoma in the early 80s. I wish I had the ability to call and share, but I'm still gun-shy on getting involved, so I understand.
Well, that's
Alma.
Okay.
But just thanks for letting us know that the issues are touching you and you're listening. Thank you.
And when she's ready to dive in, we'll be here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
James just wrote in and said, in regard to nursing home costs, bullets are cheap. Nursing home costs, James says, bullets are cheap by comparison. My mother died at home in November and suffered some pain, but not too severe. Still, I'm already picturing my demise. The pain, even with medication, is tough, but only when I have to get up from my easy chair. I'm still doing what I can to remain productive. And that becomes the name of the game. Do what you can to remain at some level of activity.
And do you think that's what the powers that be want? Are they pushing this towards a euthanasia scenario, a soylent green kind of trip almost? Do you think that's what they're striving for? Is it that black?
Well, I've wondered sometimes, Steve, if you apply the concept of, what is it, projection or transference. I'm no shrink, so I can't remember which. Be handy to have horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner on hand for some of this stuff. But anytime the Republicans talk about something the Democrats are doing that they strenuously object to, you can guarantee that sometime in the fairly near future, you will see exactly that coming out of their mouths. They talk about family values, and the next thing you know, the family values senator is caught in a hotel room with a 16-year-old boy and a box of condoms and a bottle of lotion. See what I mean? Goddamn heathen Democrats supporting that sodomistic lifestyle. Oh, wait, pardon me. Right? So when the Republicans started squealing during the debate about the Affordable Care Act, and the charge was led by the Mussolini, not the present one, the one that's spelled M-O-O-S-E-L-I-N-I, you know, Caribou Barbie. And she started screeching about death panels. Well, I looked up and went, I'll bet you there's some sort of a Republican idea for a death panel somewhere. And lo and behold, the Republican Party in 2017 has declared itself as a body to be a death panel. And they've just decided that Granny doesn't need food delivered to her home. Kids don't need lunch at school in order to be able to learn better, learn more gooder. Veterans don't need to have home delivery of food. People who can't afford heat in winter don't need any sort of monetary help in purchasing fuel with which to remain, if not warm, at least something above frigid. Okay? So, you know, death panels.
These but on the other evil. Hand, you can't have abortion.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Love the fetus, hate the child. That's the way these fuckers think, man.
Jesus, that's brutal, but it's also true.
Yep.
Let me check in here. Another member of the fraternity of Steve
awesome.
In China.
Awesome.
Says under the subject line, aging disgracefully, don't worry about the problems of getting old in the MAGA USA. The new and improved GOP is going to make sure your poor old mom and pop don't get anywhere near assisted living age. They do have a backup plan as well. A dumpster. Happy trails. Steve in China. And, you know, I saw a comment from one of my last remaining right-wing friends earlier today, and he's a last remaining right-wing friend because we were friends long before he was a right-winger. And I told him that he has the morals of a slime mold. And he said, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting rid of that cradle-to-grave dependency that we have.
Hey, Bob, you want to get a Canadian perspective on this?
Oh, absolutely. Hey, we haven't seen our Canadian member of the Fraternity of Steve in a while.
Yes, how are you?
I'm well, Steve. How about you?
Well, not too bad. Yeah, I was just listening in on the conversation, and our situation is a little better here. There's a lot more oversight, at least recently, on nursing homes. My mom's going to be 91 this year. I did live with her at home myself, but we helped each other mutually. But when she got around 80, 86, she started to trip and fall. She broke her nose, and it got beyond the point where she could, you know, I could do, or they had home health care come in and help her. That's available around our area. And once she started tripping and all the rest, I mean, that's when the family collectively decided to put her in a nursing home. And the place she's in, she's been at for 4 years, and it's definitely not perfect, but I'd say it's improved somewhat since she's been there. But it doesn't sound as bad as the what's going on in the United States, for sure.
Well, for instance, the local, just to give you a picture of here, the local hospital nearest to me, it's about a 20-minute drive. They've got an actual hospital side of the hospital. But I'd say fully half of it, and a big source of their revenue, is the so-called long-term care portion. And in order to get to, say, like the blood lab and things like that, you have to go over to that side of the hospital. And there was a big waiting room area when it was the main part of the hospital, and now it's got a couple of TVs in it. And if you go by in the morning, you've got a platoon of ancient people with hollow, vacant eyes who are parked in front of television sets with blankets on their laps, And you know that these were productive, good, God-fearing Christian West Virginians. I'd say the vast majority of them are women because the men tend to die off from industrial diseases and so forth. And you know, the old joke about Florida being God's waiting room. Well, that little wait space, that little old hospital waiting room is God's waiting room too. And one of the fundamental problems is what happens when the body, frail though it can get, outlives the mind.
Yeah, that's a little hard. Mom slowed down definitely mentally, and it is hard. But I do find if a family stays, at least in my experience, that if the family stays involved, it's very important, especially if they're in a nursing home or assisted living, that the family stay involved. I think the staff are a little more are more responsive, especially if you're involved. Otherwise, you can kind of get left off to the side. It doesn't seem too bad where she is, but it definitely makes a big difference. If
right, when you're in a group setting like that, they have to act for the benefit of the group. So if one of the people becomes noisy, here comes the howl doll, and they just get chemically restrained.
Yes, and I don't want to go into too much detail, but Mom was getting kind of antsy, and I've found as she's had a couple of health incidences, they've reduced the amount of stuff that you would say to keep them compliant, and she's actually improved since they've done that, since her health, she had been in hospital for pneumonia, or she'd been in hospital for, COPD. She was not a smoker, but she does have COPD. And I found they've had to taper that back, because sometimes they're just like flat out space cadets. And sometimes it can be because of the medications, psychiatric medications in the older brain.
So, oh yeah, and sometimes you get idiosyncratic reactions. They gave a prescription for chill pills to my mom for my grandmother.
Yes,
and they'd give her an Ativan or a Klonopin or what the hell ever, and it was like Granny just got her some high quality meth. Man, she climbed the walls. It was wild.
Yes, and it's good to, like I say, stay involved. My mama, this was about 2-3 years ago, she went to the hospital and they tried saying, oh, she's sick or that. And my sister said, no, she's on too much meds. And it's really, like I say, it's really important. My sister had worked in a group home as well as an administrator and a worker. And so she could see some of these things. And sure enough, Mom had, it wasn't ill intention, but you know, she'd had those patches on, you know, that the ones that people wrap up and smoke. And what it was is just for her age, it had suppressed her responses and respiration. So she's, I'd say over the last couple of years, she's improved a little bit because she's not on the heavy duty painkillers as much, or as much of the psychiatric stuff. So it definitely, a family really has to be involved if there's going to be any quality of life. And the ones I think I see, for the most part, unless they're really happy or not doing too bad, if family's involved, the quality of life is much better.
Indeed, indeed. And
at least in an institutionalized setting. Cause
and so when they, and so, you know, when they gut Medicaid and they gut and they get around to gutting Medicare, I mean, I got to think that the nursing home industry in the United States, Steve, has a lobby. How are they going to take that?
Not very well. It does. That's definitely not a good thing. I mean,
let me just make clear, since you're talking about the Canadian side of things, this is all part of your National Health Service, right?
To a certain degree, Mom has a pension, so. She pays she pretty well pays her own way, and it's not cheap. It's around, you know, around 30 a year, and it's an okay place. It's not the Taj Mahal, but they do cover other people who are, you know, don't have pensions. They will chip in most of that. So that's one good thing about the Canadian system. And they do have regional homes, but, you know.
Okay.
It's definitely not cheap. And the food, my biggest beef about nursing homes is the food. Ugh. They get pretty well the industrial Cisco system stuff going on there.
Yeah, well, what I refer to as prison cheese, you know, the stuff that's yellow but has no actual cheese in it.
Well, it's a little better than that, and it's not much better than, you know, like some of the processed meats you get in the store.
Well, that's where I'm fortunate. Mom has a chef that they imported from a high-end restaurant in Atlanta that cooks them three good meals a day, you know.
Wow.
So I'm really fortunate that things played out the way they did for her, because, you know, I had no choice. She was forgetting to take her medication. She was leaving the stove on. And the kicker was, before we took her driving privileges away, she went down the interstate the wrong direction.
Ah!
Oh, God.
Yeah, whoa. That's it. Yeah, and we had to take her keys away. That was heartbreaking. And she was losing weight and just wafting away to nothing. And that's when we found this facility, and we lucked upon it. And, you know, I feel very fortunate, as long as Trump doesn't take away veterans assistance, which who knows what's coming down the road. I should be able to maintain this, you know.
He loves the veterans, Steve. Come on.
Yeah, that's what he says. But look what he's doing.
No, I mean, the VA's in his budget, the VA gets a little bump. Not much, but some.
Well, they need to have a bump because he's going to start new wars, Bob. You know?
Yeah. Well, Dad was in Korea, and if it wasn't for that and his service, I don't know what we would have done. I really don't.
Yes.
My friend Steve in Canada is correct. You have to stay active. I'm up there at least three or four times a week. And you can't let them know when you're popping in either. You have to just surprise them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the alternatives can be kind of horrifying, too. I got some bad, sad news earlier today. I was talking to my dear friend, Dr. Bill O'Brien, our dear friend, Dr. Bill O'Brien. And back when we were working together on the PRISM American History series, one of the invited speakers that he brought in to talk about, and he was talking about the historic changes in fashion, he brought in a genius designer by the name of Pete Ballard, who lived here in West Virginia. And Pete was somebody. Pete had done design for Broadway musicals and was a walking encyclopedia of period fashion going back to God only knows when. And, I mean, he counted people among his friends that, you know, if I mentioned, you'd go, wow, no shit. And so what he would do in doing these designs, he would make the costumes doll size first, and they would be perfect down to the last detail. And they were, and he did painting renderings of the costumes, and there are Pete Ballard. I mean, his stuff is in museums. And the lecture that he gave on the advancement of women's rights as reflected in women's clothing was mind-blowingly brilliant. And Pete Ballard has died. Dr. Bill told me that today. 85 years old and fell down his stairs. And that was it.
I hope it was quick.
He survived in agony long enough to get to the hospital and get prayed with by a preacher. So it apparently wasn't quick enough. But it you know, Kurt Vonnegut fell down the stairs at 85 or thereabouts. And there are, and you know, there are things that, I mean, there are things that we just don't think about, like the stairs. And one false step, and
well, as you get older, you really need a house without stairs, because otherwise it's too dangerous, you know.
Yeah.
Or you have one of those lifts that you see advertised on TV, you know.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. which I'm sure I paid for with Medicaid. A lot of those are, you know.
Sure. And here's the wait, before we go any further, fundraising update. Steve, a member of the Fraternity of Steve in New York, offered a $15 challenge, and Steve, a member of the Fraternity of Steve in Georgistan, alongside Ms. Karen and Cletus is such a good puppy, answered that challenge and upped it by $10. So our fundraising goal is at $270, and I have an offer, courtesy of Billable Rick, who just pointed out to me that he just got around to kicking in last week's $50. He said, "I'll throw in another $10 for the first person to match that $10, and $20 if that match is made in the next 15 minutes." So it is 6 minutes, 7 minutes past 8 p.m. here, Eastern Daylight Time, East Coast Time. So 15 by 8:22. If we've got another $10 in, then holy cats, what was that? Thunder?
Phone?
Thunder? Oh, really? No. Thunder?
Wow.
Oh Jesus! Here we go. So anyway, we'll change that to 8:23 p.m., which is 5:23 p.m. on the Pacific Coast. 23 past the hour, if there's another $10 that's rolled in, then that'll, let's see, that'll get you to 270, 10 to 260. That'll take us down to 240 to go. And we'll be taking a little bite, a little bite, a little bite out of the end of the week deficit. So right now there's $270 to go in fundraising, and thanks everybody who keeps all of this going. Now, I was gonna turn back to, another question when I stopped myself, and I kind of hate it when I do that. But, what was it? Oh, I know. Well, I do need to do something. I have kept Todd waiting way too long. Todd's over on the stress line. Todd, can you hear us, buddy? Todd, please tell me you didn't give up. Todd gave up. Hey, Todd, listen, if you can make the Skype thingy work, okay, there's Todd again. Let's see if we can get Todd in. Todd, are you there? Stand by. Okay, so we've got Todd, and by the way,
Bob.
Yeah.
I got to leave for a little bit. I think Donnie the rat's in the laundry room. My wife just saw it running underneath the refrigerator.
Die, Donnie, die. Okay.
I'll be back.
Okay, we'll stand by.
Get him, Spark.
And by the way, hey, Billable Rick, Ralphs and Keith both answered your challenge just right in the last couple of minutes, so that takes us down to 250 to go. So, cool. Thank you. Thank you, Rick, for making that penalty challenge.
You betcha.
Let's see if we can get Todd into the conversation down in South Carolina. Stand. Let me put my hand over my ear like a true professional broadcaster. Come in, Todd.
I'm doing color broadcast.
Apparently you are, yes.
No, I'm just kidding. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
Wow, that's amazing. That's wonderful. what you guys are talking about, that's very close to what I've, you know, my heart, because I guess like a lot of other people who have been talking, it's what, you know, some people have are doing right now, taking care of the older folks. And I don't know if the reason I'm calling is because, you know, me and the morning, my morning routine, I can't help it, is Washington Journal. And the guy, the fascist weirdos minions are getting upset. You know,
not are they? Are they really?
But oh, absolutely. Oh, there are fractures, fissures, and fractures. Yes.
Can you expand on that, please, Todd? What are they pissed off about? Is he being too mean or not mean enough?
Interesting. That's a wonderful question, because it goes both ways. It goes both ways. I mean, there are some really strange people in this country who are like, no, just let them die. Like we all remember, what cycle was that? That was like 4 years ago. Well, it might have been here when people were clapping, when they were saying, they don't need health care, let them die, and everybody was cheering. Remember that?
Yeah, it was a 2012 cycle, Todd.
I thought, it was 2012. Yeah, and it was cranky old Uncle Ron Paul who said, well, what do you want to do, just leave him die in the hall? And all them Republicans just clapped and cheered because they's Christians.
You would have thought they were saying it was like 50 Cent Heineken.
Don't do that to me, man.
That's a cowbell.
It absolutely is, but it's hell on me back here, because I mean the way I am right now, I can smell corned beef and cabbage that isn't even cooking.
Oh, I forgot about that. Oh, that's right.
Ooh, I can't wait to have another bottle of Ensure. Yum, yum.
Ensure with hummus.
Shut up.
It beats zero, Bob.
That's some good stuff. And I forgot, you know, remember, you can make hummus out of black beans, too, and black beans are magical. But anyway, you know, it's about the old, my daggone, I'm telling you, I get very animated with this. I've been on the Meals on Wheels. I'm like, I'm the one who goes out when the old people, they won't leave it if you can't come to the door. I have to go out there and say, well, she can't get to the door because you have to call first because it takes her half an hour to get up, you know. And it was like what you were saying last night, too, though, about the human contact. I mean, there's just so much. And, okay, it's just too much. And the other thing is Mulvaney. All right, now remember, that was my representative until he got out.
Oh, Jesus, he was?
That bastard. So, and, you know, and I'd only been here for like a year or two. And I was like, oh, hell no, this motherfucker's out of his mind. Let me call his office. So I called him a couple of times. Sent him some emails, and when he got back to me, I forget what, I think it was about Citizens United, and I was urging him not to vote for that. So, you know, he sent me a letter saying that he appreciated me contacting his office and blah, blah, blah. So then I complained about something else, and one of his minions called my house, to my house phone. I didn't even give him my house number. He called my house phone. He said, well, you're a registered Democrat. You didn't vote for me, so why are you even saying anything? And I think I told you that. I told you that a few years ago, because I still have that letter. You see, because Mulvaney came in on that Tea Party wave. So not to mention the fact that he doesn't have his household books in order. He had to get his financial house in order first. Now, you're hearing it from me. Now, if you do some research, you'll see it. Don't take my word for it. I only know because I live here. And he had to go back and pay some debts on his mortgage because he had been finagling. He had been doing something, floating money. It wasn't right. And now here he is in charge of the budget. and then he has no idea what he's talking about. So I don't, and I'm saying all this to say, I don't, when he talks about Head Start, because, you know, I used to be in the classroom, do educational research, all that kind of stuff. So this nonsense about we don't see any efficacy, that's bullshit. That is bullshit, because the Title I means, like, a certain percentage of your school has free lunch. That means most of the kids in there are poor, and they need food. And the reason they do that is because the studies that were done way back in the late 50s, 60s, 70s. So by the time they got around to really crunching the numbers, they knew that feeding kids worked. Because it started with Get Set in 1969, then it went to Head Start. And that's the reason Head Start continues to be funded. Because you cannot teach hungry children. That does not work for many reasons, but it does not work. So either he's lying or he's just towing the company line like what Trump wants him to say, or he doesn't know and doesn't care. And I'm sorry I'm talking so long, but I get very upset about this.
You're not talking too long, Todd. I mean, you're golden.
And anyone who's ever worked in the school knows what I'm talking about. You cannot have hungry children there. And what happens is that all the kids, you know, and it's nice because the parents can drop the kids off maybe a little bit early to get breakfast. And even if they've already had breakfast, it's time to socialize.
Well, look at the Finnish model. There was a significant segment in Michael Moore's Who to Invade Next. Remember that last year?
Yes.
And they showed how they're educating kids in Finland, and it's contrary to every notion of education we have in the United States today. No homework, a lot of playtime, and what appears to be just the barest direction of what we call education.
Right. Well, they allow the children to find themselves.
And that's the thing. In the United States, Todd, we don't want children doing that. Because the only goal of education in the United States at this point in time, it has not always been this way. It kind of started out this way, and then we moved on toward a more Renaissance model. And then we backtracked from it. And now the only goal of public education in the United States, which, by the way, gets the hell slashed out of it in this budget with a shit ton of money sent over to Jesus schools because it makes Betsy DeVos happy. God damn it. The only goal is to raise little proles who know just enough to do some sort of crummy, and I don't mean crummy in terms of work is not noble, but some sort of crappy, low-paid job that the children of the wealth class don't want to do. Because, see, right. The children of the wealth class will continue to go to Choate and Andover Academy, and they'll be lead pipe cinches for Harvard and Yale and Princeton and Stanford and Brown and Dartmouth and Cornell and Columbia. And some of the high-end state schools. And there will be a little bit of scholarship money for the, you know, Thomas Jefferson famously talked about finding educable youth among the agrarian class, and he referred to finding those youth as raking the rubbish.
I remember that. I mean, he had everything figured out, too. I mean, it was almost like a basketball bracket, you know, for the playoffs. It was like, okay, this he was going to take the best student from each province or whatever it was called at the point, you know, each county, if you understand what I'm saying. And then they would get free extended education. Yep. I'm not quite sure what is going to happen with this. I mean, of course, it's just a blueprint budget. But all right, and this is my question.
Yeah, but it's not a blueprint budget, Todd. It's a goddamn wish list.
Well,
it's everything the Republican Party has wanted since Newt Gingrich pulled his thumb out of his mouth in the cradle.
But this is my question, Bob. This is what I'm saying. The current president is not a Republican. He's an opportunist, and he's just a blob. So what I'm asking is that is he doing this to try to curry favor with the people who are going to laud him, or is that what he really believes in? Or is there something else going on there?
Tough call. I can, you know, because look, let's be clear and chime in if I'm getting this wrong. Oh, by the way, big thanks going out to Andy the Angry Jew, Andy the Angry Jew, who has taken us down. to $150 to go in fundraising for the evening. Thank you very kindly, Andy the Angry Jew. Andy the Angry Jew. Thank you.
I think it's a trend now. We got two data points. That's a trend.
Yeah, well. Wait a minute.
Does that qualify as gimmick infringement, by the way?
No, that is not gimmick infringement. I'm making an ex cathedra call on that. but to get back to your question, Todd, I agree with you that, you know, he's not an ideological anything, because in many senses Donald Trump is the equivalent of what Gertrude Stein said about Oakland, California. No offense to Oakland. There's no there there.
Mm-hmm.
There's no there anywhere in Donald Trump because it's all pushed out by Donald Trump. Okay? The Sigmund Freud would chew his cigar into goddamn snuff. Sorting that shit. Says nothing here but ego.
Mm.
Well, okay. I take that back. There's rather a considerable amount of id, but everything is off the rails. And so what you've got to come back to is the fact that dumbass didn't have any budget ideas. That dumbass hasn't had an idea since the last time that somebody asked him to.
You know what'd be really tremendous if there were a string of Trump massage parlors all across Asia.
That's the last idea that fuck had.
That means the ideas
are coming from Steve Bannon and Mick Mulvaney and Tom Price. Okay, that's where the ideas are coming from. And there's another guy, and I can't remember his name right off the top of my head. He was the single largest donor to Trump's campaign. He is the reason Bannon is where he is, because he was also the sugar daddy for that website that rhymes with light and fart. And he's a computer mm-hmm. he's a computer genius who invented
Mercer.
And he invented some way of counting the number one differently, or like George Carlin used to say, he discovered a new number between 7 and 8, and it's called Blean. And he's a hardcore right wing ideologue who, again, sees nothing outside his own sick worldview. So everything that we object to inside that budget, and everything that we object to in healthcare, okay? Because remember, Donnie Dumbass ran for president saying not once, but God knows how many times, because he said the same thing everywhere he went.
We're going to have beautiful healthcare. We're going to have beautiful health care. It's going to be cheaper than that god-awful Obamacare. And you're going to have more health care. You're going to have so much health care, you're going to wondering where all this health care is coming from. And it's going to be so much cheaper, and it's going to be tremendous. And we're not going to cut Medicare, and we're not going to cut Medicaid, and we're not going to cut Social Security. And it's going to cost so much less. Because I'm a genius. Okay?
He doesn't care anything about him, so... And because he's not much interested in the job anyway, Jesus, whoever imagined that we would look back at George W. Bush and say, well, you know, at least the fucker had a passing interest in being president.
Wow.
Or in the job. Well, this guy has no interest in the job whatsoever. So if you see Granny getting zeroed out, it's a function of the homicidal ideologues like Tom Price. And there's a clip of Tom Price, by the way. There's a clip of Tom Price from the CNN town hall where he explains to a cancer survivor who makes $11.60 an hour that it's too, you know, that they're going to take away his Medicaid that saves his life, but they're going to replace it with some, he'll have access to something so much better at $11.66 per hour. Okay, so there's that set of assholes. And then there's Paul Ryan.
Yeah, no.
You know, okay.
That's the whole list.
Right, because, okay, so we know that Godwin's Law is dead, right? We're comfortable with that. I can say Hitler, 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 because Godwin's Law is dead. Well, there is this old, and it may be apocryphal, but there's this old story that Hitler came to hate the Jews in large part because when he was a starving artist in Vienna or where the ever, Salzburg, I don't know, and he was painting his shitty little paintings, that the only people who would support him were Jewish people who bought his little paintings. And so he developed this hatred and resentment, and of course there was always a deep wellspring of European anti-Semitism. My God, the blood libel comes to mind. And so that fed his hatred. Well, in the same way, I think we can talk about Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan knows that Paul Ryan does not get to be Paul Ryan without the generous common decency of the people of the United States who gave him free money because his daddy up and died. And that he sucked on that welfare tit all the way through high school and all the way through some crummy little private college in Wisconsin until he could get on a bigger tit further up the hog. And he hates Social Security for that reason. And he hates Medicare for that reason. And he hates Medicaid for that reason. Because he cannot stand the fact that he is only where he is because he's a welfare queen.
I thought about what you said the other day with Atlas Shrugged because, you know, there's a modern day Cliff Notes online. I forget Sparks or I forget the name of it. But, unlike you, I did not read it twice back to back, but I read the Cliff Notes in certain parts, and I was just like, I don't have time for this shit. And then I thought about what you were saying, and then his demographic and his life circumstance, and I was like, oh, so what he was doing was identifying with one of those characters. See, because remember, he had to make a choice between being decent and being an asshole. You know what I mean? So he went to the asshole route.
And he made damn sure he married him up some serious money.
See, and then he has a bunch. Remember, he has a bunch of fucking. See, that's not. I hate talking about people's kids. You're not supposed to talk about people's wives or kids or lovers or whatever. However, this motherfucker has got like 8 kids. Who the fuck has 8 children?
Right.
Unless you have a farm. I mean, honest to God, goddamn farm. What the fuck do you mean with eight?
Well,
kids?
But he's also one of those sick paleo Catholics, okay?
That's what I'm talking
about. He's one of those Mel Gibson. He's one of those Mel Gibson Catholics.
Because, like you said, he's been on the government teat, sucking that milk, and we cannot say it enough all this time. And then he's got the nerve to say, "Well, you have access." And he smiles. You have access. Guess what? I have access to buy a goddamn Maserati. I can do it if I want.
There we go.
But I need the money. Like, you have access to a new studio, don't you?
New studio, my ass. I've got access to a Gulfstream 5 with a studio in it that can stay airborne for days on end, just like Air Force One.
So, but see, we're getting in some tricky territory, because now, you know, we've heard Mulvaney, and I think this stuff is going to come out, because he is a novice. He does not know what the hell he's doing. And the reason I brought up the question earlier, too, about the different ways this could go with why are they going so far? Why is Trump asking for so much? Is that, all right, I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt because he has been a businessman, a failed businessman, but still a businessman. And even a child, when you start bartering on the schoolyard, you understand that you always ask for more. Like Bernie said, you know, if you ask for a crumb, if you ask for a loaf, you get, you know, you ask for more than what you want. That's how you negotiate. You know, if you want a 50% increase in your salary, well, that's stupid. If you want a 25% increase in your salary, you ask for 50%. Then you work down. I mean, that's
the other part. Exactly, Todd. And that's the other part of this budget blueprint. They put out their wet dream wish list. And if it turns out that we only cut Meals on Wheels by $1.5 million instead of $3 million.
No, but that's not what I'm fucking talking about. No,
but that's what I am talking about. In negotiations, you ask for the sun, moon, and stars, and you snicker because all you ever really wanted was the moon.
No, there are 20 people who understand everything has been cut since Reagan. Cut. That's why we are where we are. Because people are fucking stupid. And I hate to say it, and you intimated that the other day, I think. And other people, even the regular press, are starting to say, well, you know, maybe the Trump supporters haven't had the benefit of the best education. You know, trying to say it in a nice way, like, there's some dumbass white people and black people. Because there's a whole lot of stupid black people who voted for that weirdo. And you know, and it's not just that. See, and I, you know what? Fuck this shit. Everything comes down to race in this country. I mean, if it doesn't, I can make an argument where it does. And the reason I say that is because the Electoral College. That was a fucking, that was a olive branch to the goddamn slave owner. Fuck that. That's what that shit's about. And guess what? They must have known what was going to happen because that shit's still playing out. But only because their fucking ancestors dealt with covenants and straight out redlining. And let's not forget, part of that financial crisis we had with the derivatives and things, you know what? The government was going to start pressing down on the banks because they were still redlining folks. We had Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, but you see, they were still redlining people. So the banks were like, you know what? We're going to get around this. This is what we're going to do. We're going to bet both sides, and we'll satisfy the government, and we'll get paid. That's what that shit was about. But nobody wants to talk about that part. But you see, you cannot divorce race from almost any conflict we have in this country because we have not come to terms with this shit.
Hey, can I bring up a sports story that goes along that line?
Yeah.
Sure.
We all know Colin Kaepernick, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of stories out there that nobody wants to.
Yeah, Colin Kaepernick has been personally redlined.
Is that because of his lack of talent, or is it because of his political stance?
Because of the national anthem.
Yeah.
I mean, he hasn't been worth shit for the last 3 years, ever since he led the Niners to the Super Bowl that 1 year. He hasn't done anything, really, you know, as far as a player goes. He's actually regressed. You expect quarterbacks to get better the longer they're in the league.
Was the team any better than was around him in the Super Bowl year?
They lost a lot of the – there was one guy who played like one season and they retired because he was afraid of head injuries. And they lost a couple of their really like all-pro linebackers as well. So, yeah, I mean, the team's not as good as it was before, but his numbers have gone down appreciably.
Yeah, but they're also saying that nobody wants to take him because they want to make him an example.
Yeah.
So that nobody else will stand up and say anything or do something.
Mm.
Quell the demonstration, so to speak.
Well, that's not right, but I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that pro sports teams did something like that, or a pro sports league did that to, you know, somebody who they perceived was a troublemaker, let's just say, you know?
Well, yeah, look how they ostracized Muhammad Ali, you know? I mean, this goes way back.
Well, look at what happened after 1968 in Mexico City.
Oh, yeah. Juan Carlos, and I forget the other gentleman's name.
Steve, you wanted to interject something in regard to what Todd was saying.
Yeah, well, Todd was alluding about filling up the swamp, you know, how Trump was supposed to drain it. Well, actually, today I just found out that Trump is tapping my late governor, Sonny Perdue, as the next agriculture secretary. There has never been a worse governor in the state of Georgia, Bob. He was horrible. When Hurricane Katrina blew through here, we were all chasing gas tanker trucks around to get a tank of gas so we could make it to work, and he was in Spain.
Katrina?
The last big hurricane, the one that blew through New Orleans.
Yeah, that was Katrina, I mean.
Yep.
I didn't realize it impacted Georgia.
Well, it impacted the fuel lines as far as gasoline.
The same way when the gasoline line blew up.
Right.
Shut down the refineries.
It shut down the refineries and it disrupted the fuel lines, and gas soared to $5 a gallon if you could find it. And we were all chasing around gas trucks, these tankers, trying to find a gas station where we could fill our car up, and his ass was over in Spain doing God knows what, probably doing shots of whatever they drink over there. That son of a bitch. And now, I mean, it seems like whoever they tap for the cabinet is out to destroy the cabinet that they're tapped for.
Well, he's basically looking for the worst possible person to head each cabinet to destroy it, essentially.
Like Nikki Haley. Do you really think she's going to perpetuate the education department? No, she's out to destroy it. She wants to privatize it.
You're thinking of DeVos. She's at the UN. Yeah, Haley's at the UN. You're thinking of DeVos.
Oh, okay.
I know what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, it's been the most dreadful cabinet that the people he's appointed. I mean, clearly Bannon is the, you know, guy who's behind the throne here as far as making those picks, you know.
Well, I'm sorry, I've had a long day. That was a brain fart. But my point was, everybody that he's picked for his cabinet, they're there to tear it down.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, this is what I said. This is the vandals inside the gates. The barbarians are no longer at the gates. They're in the streets. And that does not bode well. Let me just jump in real quick and note that with 20 minutes to go in the program, I hate doing this shit, but with 20 minutes to go in the program, we got $150 to go in fundraising to finish out the week. And since I don't even know if I'm going to be on the air Monday, It would be nice not to have a deficit when we start More In Monday, because we might have one for Titanic Tuesday if I don't get back to the air in time. So, yeah, $150 to go to finish the week, and hopefully 10 at 15, 15 at 10, 1 at 150, 2 at 75, etc., 4 at 37.50. But hopefully that will be remedied. I have another question, just to kind of try to hit as many points as we can before it's time to head out the door.
I think you're going to get a gift, Bob.
Anybody happen to catch, because watching Geezer Augustus's handshakes has become a cottage industry in its own right. Anybody catch the meeting with Angela Merkel, Chancellor of Germany today?
I saw him greeting Angela as she arrived at the White House, and they walked in.
So they did the sit down, and he refused to shake her hand.
Oh, geez.
What?
He just looked like a lump of shit in the Oval Office. That's what he looked like.
Well, I mean, he is a lump of shit in the Oval Office, but I get your point. I get your larger point, Sparky. But
Bob, are you fucking kidding me? Seriously, he wouldn't shake her hand?
Right, because, see, I imagine he'd already heard the joke that was going around earlier today, to wit, that there was a meeting today between the leader of the free world and Donald Trump.
Oh, jeez. Actually, that's not, unfortunately, that's not
the damn
joke,
truth,
really.
Is what it is.
Yeah, that's the problem.
He should
the
be,
truth hurts.
He should be grateful,
I mean, she had
for
the deer in the headlights stare.
He just sat there and they said, you want to do a handshake? And he just sat there. He just sat there like he was having a TIA or something.
I mean, at least Barack Obama used to orchestrate those meetings and say shit and be friendly with the person that he was sitting there with.
Yeah. Well, see, he knows that. I think Trump, to the extent that he knows anything, Trump knows that he is roundly hated all over the world. I mean, there he was with the Irish Prime Minister, and the Irish hate him. There he is with the Chancellor of Germany, and the Germans hate him. I mean, they march through. The Germans have this thing where at festival parades and everything, they do these beautiful, elaborate, amazing paper mache sculptures. And they have done some nasty shit with Donald Trump that, of course, he deserved.
He pissed off the British, Bob.
Yep. Oh, sorry, we almost forgot that. God damn, that was only 24 hours ago.
Yeah. The Australians he pissed off not that long ago as
no,
well.
No, but yesterday, Rick, he accused the British GCHQ of being the ones who spied on him at the behest of the Kenyan Muslim usurper.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
And it was so bad that the GCHQ, which never utters a goddamn peep because they're kind of secretive, said, "What fuck we did?"
Is that the British Secret Service or what?
They're more like our NSA.
Okay.
And they've demanded an apology. I don't know if one has come forth. It won't come forth from the orange monster, but
I think Melissa McCarthy made an apology. I mean, Sean Spicer.
No, there was no apology. No.
I thought there was. There was some reference on CNN to the fact that the White House apologized, whatever the hell that means, you know?
That orange bastard, he never will. It's not going to happen.
No. No, it's just, it's impossible for him to do that.
Well, that's because wasn't he one of the ones who, during Obama's presidency, referred to Obama as the apologizer-in-chief, going around the world apologizing for all the things that America's done?
He's weak.
He's so weak.
The apologizer tour, the apologize tour or whatever, yeah.
You know, George Bush planted a wet sloppy right on the mouth of the king of Saudi Arabia.
I've seen that. I got
pictures of that. But if Barack Obama nodded his head in shaking hands with the emperor of Japan, Akihito, But, God damn, you see, he bowed to the Japanese. God damn, remember Pearl Harbor. Right?
This fucker is just going to alienate us from everybody.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's his goal or not.
Oh, and by the way...
He just doesn't want to travel. That's...
Well, no, he doesn't.
Because nobody will have him as a guest now.
Well, no, frankly, he would be received more poorly in foreign capitals than George W. Bush would. And that is saying a lot. I mean, he can't go somewhere that he'd like to go, like Russia. Oh, Jesus, Bob's been polarized again. And
no, you didn't.
Oh, come on. Pootie Poot is such a nice guy.
Oh, he's so snuggly and cuddly and wonderful. Yes, he's such a nice, he's a nice tyrant.
Cletus is scratching my leg, Bob.
Well, at least she ain't humping it, so, you know. I don't think I could take that. But he can't go anywhere that he would be welcome, because, most of those places, maybe he could go to Saudi Arabia, and they like tyrants there. But he can't draw attention to his Russian problems. They'd hate him in Germany. Good God, remember what they did when there was mention of him addressing Parliament in the UK, and the Parliament stood up and said, "Fuck you, Will. This is a respectable institution."
I think our friend on the stress line is trying to break in here, Bob.
Jules wants in.
We got a couple other people too, Larry and Snark as well.
Yeah, cool, cool.
All right, I'm muting.
Okay, real quick before we go on, just one quick thing. Mike in Cascadia has put a $25 challenge on the table, which, if met, will take us down to only $100 to go to finish the week. So, just having said that, we'll move forward. Snork's been here the longest of the people who haven't spoken. What's happening, Snork?
Hello, I got to go to 2 Democratic Iowa reconciliation meetings this week.
Reconciliation?
The first one was the local, which met since the election, where they had the largest turnout ever. In fact, it was about 3 times the largest turnout ever of people that wanted to make sure that we didn't have the same problem of leading the nation into ruin again. Then that was followed up 2 days later with the state chair of the Iowa Democratic Party, who came up for a listening session, where again we overwhelmed the space that was available, got to talk about all kinds of topics. And it was not just from the upset voters this time. It was actually even the upset candidates that were said in this election it was the worst they'd ever seen, where there was no inter-ballot exchange at all. The higher level state officials were not supporting the local candidates. The state representatives were not being helped by the candidates for the mid-office. It was a just complete failure of a party. And they want to work for it. And I challenge them to start tweeting us in the middle of the night what they're doing to fix things. Because in this state right now, we're at 20% approval rate for the Democratic Party.
Jesus, that's sad. Well, did you get a sense that they had an idea why what happened to them happened to them? Were there any sparkle ponies there? Were there any Jill can win? Were there any of those types?
Well, I was never a Jill can win, but I'm
third,
close
fourth
to
party.
The
I know,
ponies.
But yeah.
The one DCC representative there, and he almost got pitchforked. Like I said, what really surprised me was when the state senator was ready to kill the DCC rep. All of the money went up to the top and was sucked away from all the minor candidates.
Mm-hmm.
So all of the Act Blue money,
that was, and that was by design,
sucked away. The party has not had enough money to engage a room for us to even meet. And the last two times the check bounced. So this time we had to have a meeting in the open area of the restaurant where we all just sat down and pushed our tables together.
That's pathetic.
Well, at least you're not down to having meetings in phone booths. Not that those things exist anymore, but yeah, I get the point.
Yeah, we went from the party that the second meeting, the listening meeting is, I believe, what they called it, that they felt that they had to have, and they're now having those in all of the counties in Iowa. Discussed issues like the money and that one of the counties that was there, because there's, like I said, there's four counties there, went from being, had the record percentage voted for Obama. No other county in the country voted that much for Obama, to flip to being near the record for percentage voting for Trump.
Wowzer.
Which county is that, Snark?
I think it was Buchanan, but it could have been Delaware. Again, it's kind of egotistical. When they said they weren't Fayette, I go, oh, good, it's not my county.
Was there any talk about Kim Weaver?
Kim Weaver. I don't remember any talk about Kim Weaver.
She's a gal that's going to run against our favorite.
Hog D. Baller. Steve King. Steve King.
King.
Okay, there was major complaints that the only candidates we put up against, like a Steve King or a Joni Ernst, are people who previously lost a primary to her as a Republican, knew they had no future career path as a Republican and switched to Democrat. And then when they get into office, even the lower level, like the state representative office, they vote as a Republican.
Well, just ask Charlie Crist how well that works, switching parties, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I was just going on. Kim Weaver got like $100,000 in donations in a day or something.
Well, I will pay attention to that. That's not my district, but I am close enough that I could help.
It was after he did that tweet thing.
I won't waste the time here. I know we only have 8 minutes. We do need to get that $25 in.
I'm happy to announce Frank has met that. Thank you, Frank. So Mike's challenge has been met, and that means we are down to only $100 to go. So
let's keep going.
Yeah, that's hugely helpful. Thank you, Frank. Thank you very kindly indeed. Let me make sure I didn't miss anything.
We put together a lot of ideas. I'd kind of like to see them repeated in the other states. There was demands that the superdelegates be dropped, and at one point it basically stopped the meeting until they agreed to consider changing Iowa from. There's actually a law in Iowa that you cannot, not a law. It's a rule of the Democratic Party, basically a law. The delegates cannot be forced to vote for who the public wants. Basically, we told them that we're walking unless that rule's gone.
Yeah.
Hey,
so,
Bob, can you squeeze Jules in now?
Go ahead, Jules.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just wanted to make the comment. You were talking about the German meeting today with Chancellor Merkel. The comments that the German language papers were making was that it was a harmonious meeting. But if you read the comment sections, they are like, the German people are totally not fooled by this whole mess up. They're like, he sees her in disgust, and you can tell by the expression in his body language, this meeting was stiff and unharmonic, as the way it's put in
it
several
was
of
not
the
harmonic.
Comments.
It was not harmonious at all. Nine.
No.
And there was a screen grab of her face that looked like she had just had a drink of spoiled milk.
That was when he commented about how she should know how it feels to be wiretapped. He made a snide little comment referring back to
He was a real shitbird today.
He was, and the German people, I mean, if you read some of the comment sections in some of the German language papers, it is just, oh, they are just clearly out after him.
I mean, I think...
Merkel.
I was going to say, Jules, I think Trump's hatred of Merkel may stem from the fact that in 2015, Time magazine named her Person of the Year instead of the Donald. So he was very pissed off about that.
And he sees her as a threat because he sees her as a leader in Europe, and he's disgusted with Europe. But I mean, Europe is having, you know, is going through its own thing. I mean, look at what's going on with the Dutch and Turkey with Erdogan right now. I mean, I don't know if you mentioned this, but Turkey is actually, and this is ridiculous, but they're exporting Dutch cows. They're so pissed.
I didn't know it was possible to moo in Dutch.
Apparently it is. But they have put a ban on Dutch cattle in Turkey, and they are shipping them all out. They said if the Netherlands didn't deal with their cattle, that they were going to euthanize them and spread their pieces about the land.
So let me ask
you
this.
Well, that'll be messy. But let's be clear. Recep Erdogan is a thug.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a fascist along the same lines as Snuggly Pooty Poot or Marine Le Pen or Geert Wilders or Donald Trump. I mean, there's an autocratic fascist movement all across the world right now, the likes of which the world has not seen since the 1930s.
This is true, but the Dutch elections were the 15th. I'm sure you mentioned this. And the fact that Wilders isn't going to have enough.
No, he got his ass whipped, and none of the other parties will work with him.
He did, and it was great. I have been campaigning against him all fucking month. And
So that's a good sign. I mean, that may be a sign that this tide is going to turn, and maybe the French are going to not, you know, reject their right winger, and maybe the Germans will also.
Well, and those are the two next things: the French elections, and then polling data out of Germany indicates that for the first time, if I understand correctly, the AfD, Alternative für Deutschland, the modern Nazi party, will get its first seats in the Bundestag. Is that the right word? The Bundestag, the German parliament.
Indeed.
I believe so. Yeah, it's possible. Let's hope that the Dutch elections has actually put a different highlight on what Europe is looking at right now, as far as things go with the neo-Nazis, Nazis, etc. Because they're not, even though they don't like the immigration situation right now, which is our fucking fault, they don't also like what they're seeing out of Trump, and they don't want to end up in this same downslide as what we're seeing right now. Thank goodness, because there are people that are over there that are adamant that they need to literally just bag up all of, literally, the word bag up, all of the Muslims and throw them out. Some of their far right, you think our far right is bad, their far right is way, way fucking worse, but anyway.
Well, they've got more experience, I guess. That being the case, we have to get the hell out of here, because it's a minute before the hour, and I want to thank everybody for chiming in this evening. Larry, I'm sorry we didn't hear from you, my friend. Thanks to Steve from Georgia, Stan, and Steve from Canada, and thank you, Snork, thank you, Jules, thank you, Billable Rick, thank you, Todd, over on the stress line. It was great hearing you, and it was great to know that we could make the stress line work for you. Thank you, one and all, for helping us with fundraising. And I have happy news. Thanks to Darlene, at the very end, we end with a full we end with fundraising zeroed out for the week. So that means we start next week with a fresh, clean slate. So thank you, Darlene, in Connecticut. Thank you very, very much indeed. And so that being the case, I'm out of here. I hope I'll be here Monday evening. I should be. I don't expect I won't be. But if I'm not, you know why. So have a wonderful weekend, everybody. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to all of you who keep this effort on the air. Thank you for the precious, finite time you share spending however you do in this little conversation. Thank you to Steve and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thanks, John Fox. Thanks, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all. Happy weekend.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.